I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Mary Duty. Mary runs the legendary Papa Rolo's Pizza with her husband, which has been open on Valley Mills Drive since 1969. She's a recent retiree from years of service in Waco ISD and is currently the chair of the McLennan County Democratic Party. We'll touch on all of that and more in our conversation, but first, it's the word on the street. One Million Cups meets every Wednesday at the Hippodrome Theater. It's a free, open conversation about Waco business that usually focuses on one entrepreneur and their journey. Recently, 1 Million Cups hosted a panel of female business leaders talking about the joys and struggles specific to their industries. This was a murderer's row of panelists like Summer Shine of Luna Juice Bar, Lindsay Castillo of La Fiesta, Yasmeen Salem Hamden of YSH Law, Emily Mills of Jesus Said Love, and more. A common trend among their stories and of every business I've highlighted here on Downtown Depot was that there's no one road to success. Many companies in Silicon Valley abide by the principle of move fast and break things. Facebook, for instance, rushed to be one of the first to market in the social networking world, and it's undoubtedly near the top, but they're now in the process of repairing their relationship with millions of users whose data was used without permission. But for Latricia Griffin of Boss Cleaning Services, she's willing to slow down the process because it creates long-term customers. Latricia personally visits every potential client to discuss their needs because it sets the tone. Boss Cleaning Service cares.
So that's something I'm really big on, is building a relationship with my clients and giving them that sense of security and letting them know that I'm that I'm going to come in and do a professional job and making sure that they build that trust and that relationship with my business.
Dr. Kelsey Boss started her own physical therapy company, Compleo, when she grew disillusioned with the healthcare system. Because she signs the checks rather than being a small cog in the big machine, she can be agile in her decision-making process and enact changes she deems necessary.
We aren't productivity-based, and I think that makes a huge difference in healthcare leadership. And people are burning out left and right in healthcare, and it's one of the reasons I burned out. And I was at the biggest medical center in the state, and it was so much fun, and I learned a lot. And I came home worn down, exhausted every single day, and it was because my day wasn't about did the patient get better, it was about how many units did I get. And so being able to create an environment that's not based on units definitely makes a huge difference.
Abby Rhodes of Cheddarbox made the case for why we're seeing so much growth here in Central Texas.
Waco is a small town with big ideas, and this is the best place to start a business because of people like y'all and the ladies up here that we're like, don't tell us we're a small town. We will do amazing things, and we'll keep it small because we like it that way. But this community just really supports what vision people have.
Rhodes also dropped info on two new projects she's working on. Franklin Avenue Mac House, which will open in the former VTEX drive-thru location on Franklin Avenue and serve mac and cheeses, sandwiches, and salads, and also Well-Rounded, a late-night and weekend dessert donut shop going on 25th Street next to Happy Harvest. Both concepts are slated to open this year. Time magazine published a piece last week titled Why Young Americans Are Increasingly Moving to Small Towns. James and Deborah Fallows are the co-authors of the article and of the new book, Our Towns, a 100,000-mile journey into the heart of America. One of their findings is about a new trend of ambitious young people eschewing the nation's traditional commercial centers. It used to be a given that the top achievers sought jobs in New York City, D.C., Seattle, or L.A. Now, a number of those folks are looking at smaller towns as viable hubs, and the secret is in the dirt. In the biggest cities, personal and business decisions depend so much on the price of real estate. In smaller towns, where there are much lower costs for apartments, homes, office space, or art studios, there are simply more possibilities on the table. Remember, the only unforgivable sin in business is running out of money, and your burn rate, the rate at which the company loses money, is much slower if you can keep your overhead low. The authors highlighted two such cities gladly taking the overflow from major markets, Duluth, Minnesota, and Fresno, California. Jake Soberall grew up in Fresno, but left after high school to start a career as a big city lawyer. What's the main thing making Fresno better? He asks in the piece. I believe that we have a generation of young people who do not want to adopt their parents' downbeat view of this place. Increasingly, we're able to count among those young people some of our most talented. Whereas before, Fresno was famous for losing those people. Karen Tonis is a founder of Bent Paddle Brewery, one of the largest in the state of Minnesota. She said, a lot of people who grew up here or got to know it from college, they would love to stay here, but they feel that they have to leave. But now we're seeing young entrepreneurs who went to college here and say, I love it, I'm going to stay, and I'm going to figure out the way how. And I feel like there's suddenly more of a diversity of job opportunities here, as people embrace the history of Duluth and become proud of its possibilities. Now, either of those quotes could have been about Waco, and thankfully we have great organizations like Prosper Waco that actively work to keep talent in town and restore that civic pride. Whether it's Fresno, Duluth, Detroit, or Waco, it's good to remember that we're not the only town trying to do better, and that we have a lot to learn from those around us. I'm now joined in studio by Mary Duty. Mary is a longtime civic leader and restaurateur here in Waco. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
I'm so happy to have you. I know you have a very long history in Waco. Tell me a little bit about your heritage.
Well, I was born in a little town called Mount Calm. I was actually born in the Waco Hospital, but my parents farmed and my mother taught school. Went to Baylor in the late 60s. My mom had been in graduate school in the 50s, so I was running around the Baylor campus reading children's books in 58, 59. But I've been, you know, this is where we came to buy seed. This is where we came to shop. This is where we went, you know, downtown, when downtown was downtown. And now downtown's back. And so, yeah, we've seen it all.
So what was Baylor in the 60s like for you as a
Baylor
woman?
Baylor in the 60s is a beautiful place, wonderful leadership, super professors. Baylor is known for its teaching. And we still have those wonderful teachers at Baylor. And I think Baylor will always be defined by its teachers. And certainly weren't defined by football back in the 60s. but we've done well in that area, you know. Dr. Cooper, God bless him, explained to me that when you have a good athletics program, donors give money, and then you can buy more books in the library. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. But Baylor was small, 9,000-something students, maybe 10,000. An intimate campus. It's grown a lot.
What were you studying and why?
Well, you know, as all young kids from the country, I was coming to Baylor to become a missionary. And for some strange reason, I thought I was going to teach English and history. It's somewhere in a foreign country, and it's like, does that really make sense? Later on,
go teach some American history
exactly,
to these young Cambodian
exactly.
children.
My mother explained to me over a load of laundry that perhaps I should go out and try to be a missionary in my own community, and be a light in my own community.
It's a great
and
call
if that works,
all.
Then you can branch out and go other places. And oddly enough, your moms are always right, people. Here I am in my community trying to do what's right about my community.
And you've had a great opportunity to get very involved with the community, not just through your work with the Democratic Party here in McLennan County, but by owning one of my most beloved restaurants in Waco, Papa Rolo's.
Well, you're very kind. All the legal trappings aside, my husband is the star of that show.
Okay.
I play a really good second fiddle. I'm a good corporate wife, as they say.
So he is Papa Rolo.
He is Papa Rolo. When he was at Baylor, he had a choice of going out and getting a job or doing something fun, and he was working at a pizza place. It was like, what a racket. I can make food, enjoy talking to people, and make money. And so he actually went to Kmart and bought a suit, $49, which was a lot of money at the time, went to the West Bank and Trust in West, negotiated a $5,000 loan, and bought the first little Papa Rolo's. It was actually Pepe's Pizza then. And he took that little Pepe's Pizza and, you know, parlayed it into what we have today.
Which is this hilarious sort of maze of different rooms and delicious
flavors.
He's
a goofy guy, and he enjoys that kind of excitement inside the building. And then, of course, you know we're known for the food, like I say. And you know, I'm it's really coming. Well, we don't even get in our corporate structure. We're a family business. We've got 7 children. 5 of them took part in the business actively as kids. Our oldest son now has the unit out in Hewitt.
Okay.
And has a family going out there, and our other son came back from the military and has a couple of food trucks, so it's kind of a little creeping, crawly dynasty. But the original unit there on Valley Mills Drive is home.
One of my favorite things to do when I'm having a rough week is to sneak away 11 a.m., 12, go to Papa Rolo's for lunch, sit in that front room and watch reruns of the Three Stooges and Little Rascals. There's something so calming about just getting into this dark, you know, enclosed space and getting
hopefully
to be
nice
surrounded
and cool
by these beautiful
and comfy
cartoons.
It's connecting with classic comedy is I think a healthy thing. I think Norman Cousins, in fact, realized that his healing when he was sick a number of years ago came from watching Laurel and Hardy and Three Stooges. And it's true. I mean, you can just forget yourself with an old movie. Those things will be funny 100 years from now. They'll be funny 100 years from now. And we just enjoy doing that, and people still enjoy coming to watch.
Papa Rolo's is a staple, but you've been able to use it not just as a place for people to come eat, but really as a breeding ground for new conversations and ideas that sometimes in conservative South might get suppressed.
Well, and we're lucky because we're a bi-party family. Roland sleeps on the right side of the bed at our house, and I sleep on the left side of the bed, okay? But then he has, we negotiate many compromises. He is a firm believer in the mission of Planned Parenthood and nobody's fool and educating young people as to what their responsibility is as a young person, which is not typically a conservative point of view. And we can agree on that. We can agree on a lot of fiscal things. But we don't overtly bring politics in, but we do. There's certain things. Like when our child was run over by the car getting off the school bus, we became a rallying point for school bus safety in Waco because the fine at the time was $50, and the police didn't even write a ticket when Kevin was run over because it wasn't worth it. The paperwork didn't merit at the time, and that naturally upset Roland, and he got busy and I got busy, and we jumped into the political world trying to make sure that no family ever had to go through that again, and it took 3 or 4 years, but we did get the law changed, and children don't die near as often getting off a school bus as they did back in the 80s.
Well, thank you for your service in doing that.
Well, you know,
it takes people like you. It takes, and when Betty Beard was on here a few months ago.
Oh, Betty's such a sweetheart.
Incredible lady. And what she said was so true, that your vote is your voice, and you have to utilize that voice
if
you want change.
And if you don't, you get what you vote for. Mm. And it takes all of us, and I do believe in a two-party system. I was very pleased the other day when we had a candidate come in to talk about school finance and property tax relief and how those things are connected in terms of the state legislature. One of the biggest fans in the room was a registered Republican, a member of the Municipal League, because he sees the pressure that the state of Texas is putting on cities as far as having, and counties having to do their taxing thing. We can find, if we must find common ground in our community, Republicans and Democrats, and we've got to be able to work together for what makes our community better.
I mean, exasperation with the status quo really became evident in this Trump presidency. You know, we saw that years of frustration with economic anxiety, that finally came to a head, and we're starting to see these income gaps between people of color and between white people.
Horrific.
It's growing to proportions that we haven't seen since the Roaring Twenties. And a stat here from the Brookings Institute, blacks now earn 59 cents and Latinos 72 cents for every dollar earned by a white household. It's going to be really hard to bridge that gap. And it's not an issue of Democrat or Republican.
Absolutely not.
That's something that we're all complicit in, and we all have to do what we can in our personal community to address the racial inequality.
And the poverty, that piece of the puzzle, drives everything. When you talk about how we reform schools and how we make schools the best we can have, and of course, Waco's had some situations. I've been blessed in Waco. I've worked at some of the best schools in Waco. I've worked at a school that was about to close. Cesar Chavez was a school that was on one of those chopping blocks once a couple of years ago. But the one thing I did find out in traveling around to all, I ended up that last year I worked as a consultant, so I went to all the middle schools in Waco. And what I found was oftentimes facilities would vary. Resources would vary on what kind of computers you had or what kind of, what the state of your library was. But the children are the same. They're inquisitive. They're sharp. They want to get ahead. They're looking for what it's going to take to be successful. And we've got to get all those pieces of the puzzle together, because what we're facing right now is all of a sudden we're looking at five schools and saying that there's something obviously wrong with how we're teaching or the children or whatever, and that's not the case. These kids just need to look at education all across the board, because education is that key out.
Well, and it's becoming more clear every year when studies are done about how important the young education is, like age 3 and 4.
Zero to two is huge. And pre-K is often fought by my friends on the other side because they think we're trying to sort of indoctrinate the children early, you know. And no, we're just, you know, Head Start was a great idea. Johnson had a great idea with Head Start. Head Start programs are fantastic. And we ought to have universal pre-K for all of our kids. I don't care who you are. There's a lot of stuff we could do that would make our country a better country, but all of it starts in Waco, Texas.
Mary Duty is the head of the McLennan County Democratic Party. She is also married to Papa Rolo, the Papa Rolo, and was involved in Waco ISD, a teacher for 17 years. What was your experience like teaching in Waco ISD, and how would you assess where the district is currently and where it's going?
Oh, well, there's a politically charged question. I loved every minute I spent in WISD. I started teaching in WISD and thought, well, I'll get my foot in the door here, and then I'll move maybe to a suburban school. Because I don't know why, just in my head. It's kind of like that missionary thing. And I fell in love with where I was at Carver Academy. Carver Academy at the time was a NASA school, was a magnet school focusing on science and technology. We taught in a real innovative way with a thing we called the Odyssey. It was a 9-week unit of study where everything was all the integrated curriculum is the buzzword. And oh my Lord, we had fun. And the kids had fun and they learned and it was just great. Then testing happened, which was sad. And then we drifted away from that a little bit. I ended up going to Lake Eyre, great year at Lake Eyre. Then we're going to transfer. There was a lot of fluidity for a number of years on closing campuses and consolidating campuses. So I became a journeyman teacher. I went from Carver to Lake Eyre to Tennyson. And then Tennyson became Tennyson and Atlas, the GT school. That sounded like fun. And so I went over there. Though what I really loved was teaching GT, quote-unquote, mainstream kids and our special populations all together in the same room, because we live in the same world. And when you put all those personalities and all those needs in that same room, you get tremendous performance off everybody. Some of the kids, if you didn't have labels on the children, you would see phenomenal work coming out of children that had been labeled as maybe less than phenomenal.
Okay, so just to be clear, you're saying that in classes that you taught, when you had more of a mixed group of students, there was greater success overall.
Yes, and there would be people that would come in and augment what I was doing with certain populations, with the GT kids or with the with kids that need extra help. I mean, because we're all different.
Sure.
We had much better. I love teaching in a full mixed classroom.
Well, Mary, one thing I really appreciate about you and your perspective and your worldview on politics in general is that it's about local. You know, like
we can sit
here, you know, decrying Eric Schneiderman and
name all
the bad things that are happening. But the fact of the matter is, politics is, you know, in large part tabloids for the educated. And really, we can't control what's happening in Washington.
Oh, I know how this whole thing started. We were talking about Andrea. Here's Andrea. We have this wonderful, vibrant African-American woman going on the city council to bring that perspective to our city council, which, you know, at one point, I mean, we've had representation from all communities at times on our city council, but she brings a fresh voice to our city council, and she's going to bring a fresh look on how we look at where we are in terms of building our community. I drove here down, University Parks, and we're seeing all sorts of development on the other side of the river. Hello, it's about time.
You're talking about East Waco.
I'm talking about the river and East Waco and West Waco. And we're seeing incredible development on the other side of Waco that we've sort of ignored over the years. And Lord knows, I mean, I was around for the desegregate. You know, when Waco at one time was a segregated city, East Waco and West Waco. And we had a chance to watch Waco grow and change. In fact, the way Waco, when you talk about, I'm going to brag on the city, the way Waco did their desegregation in the 1960s was almost a textbook case in how to do it right. We had seen what happened in Greensboro, North Carolina. We'd seen what had happened in some of these towns where violence occurred and where there were sort of protests and people weren't willing to talk to each other. And the African-American business community and the white business community and probably the Hispanic business community got together and decided how it would happen. And it was done gradually. It was done over a period of weeks. First, it was public accommodations with movie theaters. And then it was the next step. And in those terrible years of violence across the South, Waco desegregated in a very peaceful way. Now, economic development shriveled and died in East Waco, and we're working on that now. Because there was a trade-off. Everybody went to West Waco to shop.
Well, and if I'm correct, the late Councilman Wilbert Austin was very integral in those discussions of integration.
Oh,
and
yes.
Now the namesake of a beautiful new park.
Oh, I know. Oh, Wilbert Austin, what a man. What a man. And his stories, I hope someone said, I think they did. But I'm pretty sure we need to have stored all of those stories that he had about those times. Because he was a key figure in getting that done. Wilton Lanning passed away recently. He was another fellow that had a part in those discussions. And it was extraordinary the way we decided how to handle it. Have we been perfect all the time? No.
I'll get you out of here on this, Mary. You have seen Waco in a lot of different iterations.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you say Waco is now in terms of its development, and where do you see Waco heading?
Well, I hope it never gets as crowded as Austin, because that's really sad. No, I'm just kidding. In fact, Paparolo's story. Roland decided to move the business on Valley Mills Drive. The weekend he opened Paparolo's in August of 1969 was the weekend that downtown shut down Austin Avenue and made it a pedestrian mall. Austin Avenue had been the drag, the drag where you drive your car up and down. And so there was a shift to West Waco in the late 60s. Why, I don't know, but it worked out that way. We, as a city, have, it's hard to explain because it's so complicated, but then again, it's so simple. We're a city of everyone. We're a city of every color, every race, every religion. And we need to get back to what makes us strong. We've got the gains thing going on, the silos. Oh, my. People wanted to tear those ugly things down for years. It was like, ooh, what an eyesore, right by the church and everything. And they have absolutely put us on the map. We travel a lot. I'll be in Europe, and somebody will say, what about the Branch Davidians? Wasn't that close to Waco? I'm like, oh, yes. Then we talk about football. RG3, some guy in Paris, France, RG3. I'm like, okay, yeah, good. And so we've had our ups and downs on the world stage, on the national stage. Chip and Joanna, whether you like them or not, have revitalized the downtown area. And I think they'll still continue to be a strong business influence, even though the show's gone, because they're not going away. They're a family with five children. They got the mouths to feed. They're going to stay busy. But it's also the other businesses that have come along since then. our food truck entrepreneurial group has just blossomed because of the change. Antique stores. I was down in an art gallery the other night. For God's sakes, we have an art gallery in Waco, Texas. They serve wine. It was great. We're going to become the city that Waco needs to be. And it'll happen when all of us, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, people that, you know, we all got to vote. Because the vote makes all the difference in the world. Your voice is your vote. And, of course, that's what I do in the party, and that's what John does in his. And we all want everybody to vote and to be a part of what's good about Waco. We need to continue to promote all that's good and wholesome and sweet about Waco. Because we've got some, you know, we've got some negative things that we could talk about, you know, bad times that have happened in Waco. But we don't want to dwell on those. We want to grow from them. We want to learn from them. We were one of the last lynchings in America. The lynching of Jesse Washington was written up in the St. Louis newspaper when that happened. I mean, horrifying. We've made our peace with that, I believe, with Regina Dupuy. But we've got a lot more. We got to go a different way. We've got to move on toward unity, toward positives.
And that horrific event known as the Waco Terror. If you live in Waco or have spent time here and you're not familiar with that story, I encourage you. It is hard, but it is important to know our history. That was in the center of downtown. That was on the steps of the courthouse.
Right.
And I really appreciate you coming on here, Mary, to share your perspective. Because once again, Waco is evolving. It constantly is. And the goal of Downtown Depot is to track that change. So I'm so grateful that you were able to come on here.
Well, I'm so glad we have a Downtown Depot, because we thought downtown died. And it was like, oh, that's so sad. Because the suburbs can't live without a vibrant downtown.
Well, Downtown Depot is busy. I can tell you that. We've got a lot of trains coming in and out of the station, and I'm grateful to talk about it with you.
Oh, it's been fun. I'm anxious to watch Waco grow even more.
We'll do it. Well, Mary Duty of Papa Rolo's and the McLennan County Democratic Party, and of a long teaching career and civic engagement, thank you so much for coming on Downtown
Depot.
Well,
thank you. I feel like I've really made it now. I've been on Downtown Depot. Yes!
Thanks again to Mary Duty, all those inspiring entrepreneurs at 1 Million Cups, and to you who follow Waco Business News on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and keep this conversation going in between episodes. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.